Local news, culture, and NPR.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. I thank you so much for being here with me tonight, and also wish you a happy MLK Day. The day we honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that's today. And coming up, Patricio Rubio checks in with members of the Sullivan County NAACP, gets their perspectives on Dr. King's legacy and his relevance today. It's coming up in the second half of the program. But first up, the other big news story of the day you may have heard. Donald Trump was sworn in as the United States' 47th president. Happened down in the nation's capital, right around noontime. You may have heard it live right here on Radio Catskill. Well, on Friday, ahead of the inauguration, I talked to Nina Burley, veteran journalist and author, about the upcoming inauguration. I figured, well, for tonight's show, maybe it'd be a good idea to check in with her now that the inauguration has actually happened. Nina Burley's Substack newsletter is called American Freak Show, which is about, quote, keeping an eye on MAGA extremism and its absurdity. I spoke to her earlier this afternoon. Nina, welcome back to the Local Edition.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
So I guess just top line, what are your thoughts today now that we've seen the inauguration? It's happened. I assume you were watching, right?
Well, I was watching part of it. I've been writing my Substack today. And so I watched the tech bros take their seats in the front row. And, you know, not surprising that they were in front of the motley crew of cabinet nominees who were seated behind them, because they are the financiers of this administration and the likely beneficiaries of some of the things that are planned.
So that's the first thing that you noticed there. Can I ask what you were writing today? Were you writing on this topic while you're kind of keeping half an eye on this?
Yes, yeah. I'm writing my Substack, The American Freak Show, about the tech bro takeover of Washington, and you know, the crypto caper over the weekend that preceded this inauguration, the kind of shameless the meme coins were the Trump meme coins, the Trump coin, and then the Melania coin, which hauled in billions of dollars on paper overnight, from zero to billions. I mean, I think it was up to $58 billion at one point in the paper value of the president's wealth. And, you know, even people in the crypto world were shocked and horrified about this. So, you know, what you're seeing is it's not surprising at all, really. I mean, the level of power that we're looking at here is practically pharaonic. You know, it's beyond. I mean, he's now said in his speech just now that he is going to rename the Gulf of Mexico. I guess we can see that on our maps here in this country. I don't know how other countries are going to feel about it, but more concerningly, he's still insisting that he's going to go down there and seize the Panama Canal. And then, you know, the whole speech, and it's the tone and tenor is just so at odds with what, you know, the reality is in this country, which, you know, it is not we're not in a state of disaster and despair here. We're absolutely not, you know, yes, the price of eggs has gone up, and I'd like to see how quickly he's going to turn that around, you know, because the reason for it is not Biden policies, but the avian flu epidemic, as everybody knows who's paying attention. You know, it's supply and demand. There are fewer chickens right now. So, meanwhile, you know, the IMF, International Monetary Fund economists on Friday released a report saying that the U.S. economy is better than any expectations even had been written or predicted in the previous year. So, you know, it's just this, you know, like, you know, the Oz is back in charge, and telling people, I guess, what some of them want to hear, that this is this is a disaster, you know, that we're living through disastrous times. And, you know, it's because there are people who are upset about some of the social progress and social programs that have, you know, disrupted the power structure, the traditional power structure, which put white males, white straight males in charge of everything. And, you know, that's why you get the, you know, daddy's back, right? You know, that's the meme. Daddy's back. Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA was tweeting that over the weekend with a picture of Trump's inaugural photograph, which, by the way, he sort of pulled the same face that he pulled for his mugshot down in Georgia. And so, you know, we're in uncharted territory, but well, I mean, some of it is predictable.
He knows how to play the hits, though. He knows what's popular. You know, that mugshot was very popular. He's like, let's do that again. You talk about him like painting. You're talking about that what he was talking about at the podium is not really reality. And my two thoughts on that. The first is, I mean, that's typified the Trump era, his first term in office, and the years since then. His side of politics has been about recreating reality, apart from what, you know, facts or a good faith analysis of the facts would tell you. But the other thing is his first inaugural speech famously was painting a picture of American carnage, as he put it, that didn't really exist then. And he painted it a lurid, vivid picture of American hellscape that did not exist in 2016 when he was elected in the office, 2017 when he was sworn in. But by 2020, America more closely resembled, after most of his first administration, America more closely resembled the carnage that he described in his opening speech. There's almost a predictive element to that first speech. Is perhaps that going to be an element at play in the unreality that was painted in today's speech?
Well, yeah, that remains to be seen. I mean, I do think that there are some things that, you know, people who support Trump say about him that remain true and are positive. And I don't want to be sound like I'm on his, you know, on the team. But, you know, he didn't actually start any kind of a war during his term. And I think there's some feeling that, you know, in this country after the Iraq War and after the 2009 crash, which was engineered by credit default swap geniuses in Wall Street, right? That there was a lot of pain in this country for a long time. And so there was this sense of unease. And I think people didn't feel that, you know, there were white people in this country who didn't feel that Obama was speaking for them or treating them, or, you know, that they were being treated well. Which is, I think, absolutely absurd. But, you know, unfortunately, in this country, we have streams of racism and reaction to that, you know, that kind of turning upside down of what people expect the, you know, the patriarchal, the white sort of patriarchal traditional power structure in this country to be. And, you know, the people who hang themselves up on that, I think, are in the minority. But I think in this election, what happened was there are people who responded to, for example, you know, his claims to have been like persecuted by the government. Well, you know, there are a lot of people who have had, you know, run-ins with, you know, they didn't have to pay their insurance, or they, you know, they had they're angry men who, you know, feel like they've been cheated in divorce cases and so on. Or, you know, there are a lot of black people in this country who have, in fact, not been treated well by the police. So there was a sense, I think, that kind of resentment resonates with certain people, right? And he picks up on it. I mean, it is true that he is one of the best politicians in our lifetime. I mean, he's managed to pull himself back up after, you know, half, most of the country witnessed a crowd that he egged on rampaging through the very Capitol Rotunda, where he today was re-inaugurated. So, you know, it's a masterful performance, but I think that looking forward, you know, I'm not sure of what he's signed, the executive orders, the 100 executive orders that he's going to sign, but by fiat, by the end of today, he's probably going to have opened up national parks to, you know, drilling, and he's definitely going to call a national state of emergency on the border, which allows him to move troops around, I believe. And he has promised to take federal troops and send them into local police jurisdictions. So, you know, all bets are off. I mean, that's not something that normally happens in this country, and I don't think that Americans have ever seen anything like what's going to happen here. I mean, I think from my sources down in Washington today, the Proud Boys, the paramilitary Proud Boys, are marching on the streets of Washington right now, cheering on, waiting for the January 6th miscreants to be let out of their jail cells.
Yeah, he didn't start any wars in his first term, but he sure is cavalier about talking about moving troops around domestically.
That's right. That's right. And remember, he talked about the enemy within and the vermin, right? The vermin coming into America. And these are all ways that, you know, fascist leaders have spoken in Europe. We're not used to seeing that here. This is a heterogeneous society. It's a country of immigrants. Every single person here is descended from an immigrant, unless you're a Lenape or a Cherokee. Right.
Yeah.
So we're all immigrants. We're heterogeneous. We're very different from Europe, from the Germany that Trump's ancestors came from. And I'm sorry to say that my research into his family indicates that those people were, Aryan nation type, individuals who passed that down to him. And I think that there is white nationalism in his speeches, and there's white nationalism in his appeal. And that, again, is problematic in a heterogeneous society like ours.
Nina, before we go, something I want to ask you about was something we spoke on Friday on Radio Chatskill. And if people want to hear that interview, it's up at WJFFradio.org. But we were speaking going into this inauguration weekend. And now I'm checking in with you again now that we're post-inauguration. But one of the things that stuck out to me as we were talking is you just mentioned how, you know, you're following Truth Social. You've been following President Trump and his world of supporters very closely for quite a while now. And, you know, there's a number of people who have not been paying as close attention and de facto are going to be paying more attention now because this is going to be dominating the news cycle in certain ways. I'm just wondering, do you have advice for people as we enter this second Trump administration about how to keep up with this information and pay attention to what's going on without necessarily burning out, for lack of a better term, on it?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jason, because, well, without burning out, I mean, there's one sort of avenue of paying attention, which is reading things like my Substack, which is called The American Freak Show, in which I, every week, and I'm not doing this as an advertisement, I'm going to explain something. I do something every week, which is I am not a pro-MAGA observer. I've been a journalist, a political journalist for decades. I understand how the game is played, but what I'm writing is very biased, but also fact-based information. So I read all week long about what's going on, and then I write an opinion piece. But if people want to pay attention and they want unbiased information that is fact-based, there are still sources for that. You must pay attention. People must pay attention if you're going to be a member of this of a democratic society. And those sources are Associated Press, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. You can watch CNN. Now, some of these places do have a bias. MSNBC obviously has a bias. Fox News has a bias. But there are unbiased sources of information, and you need to be paying attention to them. The Guardian, the BBC, okay? The BBC, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, there are still sources of information out there that are not biased, and you need to be paying attention. You should bookmark them, and they'll keep you up to speed on what's going on. And, pay attention. I'm talking about it and reading about it all the time because it's something that I have done for a long time, but I will take a break all the time. I read fiction. I write fiction, as I've told you. I like to go outside. Today is a beautiful sunny day right now. It's freezing out there. I'm going to go out and go skiing on the cross-country skiing because there's some beautiful snow. And, you know, remember that we have a beautiful country and we have, you know, everyone here, I feel, in this community, there are a lot of people who voted for Trump. I know that those people would come to me if my house was on fire and help me put it out, as I would them. We are the same people. And this kind of president, this kind of divisive rhetoric that he has been spewing is something that we need to become immune to and stick together.
All right, Nina Burley, I want to thank you so much for talking to us this afternoon and giving us your reaction to the news of the day.
Happy to do it, Jason, anytime.
Big thanks again to Nina Burley, veteran journalist and author. Her Substack is called American Freak Show, and her latest book is called Zero Visibility. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Sullivan County NAACP weighs in on this Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This year on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, an exploration of his legacy and the ongoing project of forging an equitable society. Join us for WNYC's annual MLK Day special with the Apollo Theater. Guests include Rashad Robinson of Color of Change, Christina Greer, professor of political science, and Mike Madrid, host of the Latino Vote podcast.
Join us for an encore presentation tonight at 8 on Radio Catskill.
It seems to be a clear sign of support for TikTok. From the public statements that Trump has been making in the past week, he wants to be seen as the savior of TikTok, the person behind bringing this app to Americans and giving them something that, you know, brings them joy from day one of his presidency.
I'm Sabrina Tavernisi. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
It's The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. And it is MLK Day today. At the First Baptist Church in South Fallsburg today, the Sullivan County chapter of the NAACP hosted Never Forget the Dream. That was their remembrance and celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Prior to the event, last week, Patricio Rubio spoke with NAACP members Annie Green and Joyce Burnett. They shared their perspectives on Dr. King's enduring legacy and his relevance in today's world.
My name is Annie Green.
And I'm Joyce Burnett, a member of the Sullivan County NAACP.
So welcome both to the program. I want to see, in your words, why is it important to sort of commemorate the life and the work of Dr. King?
Well, Dr. King fought very hard for the rights of not only Blacks, but the rights of human beings. He was an advocate for equality, justice, and he wanted that not only for one person, but he wanted it for all people. And it was his dream that we all could, as we would just say, get along, that we all would have the same equality. We would all have the same rights, no matter what your color was, no matter what your religious background was, that all men should be created equal. And I think that as the younger people, I'm not hearing about that. They need to be reminded. It's something that we should never forget. And that's our theme. Let us never forget the dream.
My daughter is 5, and she actually is learning about Dr. King in school. And we were talking about it on the way home the other day. And I put on YouTube his speech that was given at the Lincoln Memorial. And I actually teared up listening to it, just because, you know, what's going on in the world today, what's going on in America today, and, you know, hearing the words of Dr. King, hearing about, you know, he has a dream of everyone sort of getting together and getting along together, no matter what color your skin was, no matter what religion you're in. And, you know, I thought about it, and then in that time he was remarking, you know, it's been 100 years since Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. And even then, to then, in that time, it's men, Black men and Black women and people of color weren't free, fully free. And now looking back now, way things are, you know, things have improved for people of color. But truly, I don't think we live in a world, this is all my own personal opinion, that we don't live in a world that we are getting along. And I believe things are ramping up again, that folks are being judged by the color of the skin, by their creed, their religion. Do you feel that Dr. King's dream will ever be fulfilled?
Well, for some of us that are older, I was born in 1948, and I was raised in the South. I went to an all-Black school, not because necessarily that I wanted to, but that's just the way it was then. You had what they would call colored schools and the white schools. But the dream of Dr. King was that we all would be treated equal. And in that being said, today, our children do not know, some of them are not even being taught the dream that Dr. King had. They're not even being taught who he really was. He was more so than just a Black preacher, but he was an advocate for all men, all women. He was an advocate for justice, and he definitely stood that all men should be treated equal. And I just feel that as these kind of events should be held so that we won't forget. You said your daughter is 5 years old. And she's learning this, but if nobody teaches her, if we just let it go, and she would think that that's the way it was always. But somebody my age know better.
I mean, this when Dr. King made that speech, you know, that wasn't that long ago in the scope of things. That wasn't that long ago, and it's amazing how things have changed and how things sort of stayed the same in a way.
Yes, I remember as a young woman when my father went to vote. And that even to this day, I can remember the day that my dad and two of my older brothers went for my father to vote. That will always be in my head. If it had not been for the fight, if it had not been for the marches, if it had not been for people like Dr. Martin Luther King, I don't know if that would have happened. And these are memories that I have. These are memories that I tell my children. These are memories that I tell my grandchildren. So on election day, they get the lecture on, I remember when your great grandfather went to vote for the first time. And I still take pride in that.
I think some folks might take it for granted, the right to have the right to vote. It is something I personally always remind myself, and the reason why I do vote is that there was folks before me who fought for that right. There was folks not too long ago didn't have the right to vote because of the color of their skin. And this was such an important thing to fight for, to have a say in what happens in America's politics.
Yes.
You said you went to school to an all-Black school that was segregated down in the South. When things were changing to become desegregated, how was that experience for you?
Some of us was ready for the change. Some of us wasn't ready for the change, because that is a big change. We saw on TV how some of the other schools in the states were, they had already said, okay, you can go to school there, and how they was treated. Some of it was fearful, but then some of us just bit the bullet and said, we're going to go. Fortunately or unfortunately, wasn't one of those persons. I graduated from an all-Black small school, but there was a plus to going to an all-Black school. The plus to me was because all of my teachers were Black, everybody that worked in the school was Black, and they were able to teach us things that the things that my teacher said to me when I was a kid, if the teacher said that to the children today, they would be instantly fired. But during that time, they were able to teach us grow up to be a man. They were able to teach us that our rights and how to carry ourselves. So it was a plus, but then it was a negative. The negative part of us not being able to go to school, we weren't integrated, I should say, was because we had inferior books. We didn't get new books. We got passed down books from the white school. And every now and then, I can remember that we would get a new book, and everybody would be so excited that we got a book that you were able to write your name in the book as the first person. But all of that had to do with the dream.
Do you feel that in today's world, you mentioned that we never forget, but do you feel that folks have forgotten what Dr. King was fighting for and his dream?
Yes, because I feel that the reason is because it's not strongly taught, and we take certain things for granted. Now the history is slowly being erased because somebody said, like that book isn't right. That didn't happen that way. But if you lived it, you know the books are true. That means some of the history is being vanished. And if it's vanished and erased, somebody's going to say that never happened.
Do you feel in a way things have gotten better since you were a young child?
Yes, definitely.
In what ways?
One, we now can get the same education as others, where there were times when we couldn't. That we can get the same kind of jobs. Sometimes we have to fight a little bit harder because of that inbred racism that is being hid. But when you walk into a building, you walk into an office to be interviewed, the first thing they see is your color. And that I can't hide. That I don't want to hide. I take pride in being a Black woman. And I feel that all children, not only the Black children, but all children should be taught, no matter whether you got money or you don't have money, that you are just as good as anybody else. And if we're not, if we don't teach them that pride, if we don't teach them that to appreciate what they have today, then we're going to soon just not exist. We might exist, but not in the way that we fought to exist.
And in what ways do you think, since your time as a young child, what things have not changed? What things we should still be fighting for?
We still should be fighting for equality and justice and voting.
What message do you have for young children today?
Get involved. Get involved in your community.
Local election.
Even everybody goes out to vote on the presidential election, but the school boards, the town, the villages, they need their votes.
Changes us.
If you want to change, sometimes we have to be the change. We have to show up. And if I had a message for our young people, I would say to them, don't forget, keep your pride, get involved. This is your generation now. And if they don't get involved, then where are we going? We're either going to go and be a standstill, or we're going to end up going slowly backwards. And it's going to be a process that the backwards is going to come in a way that they don't see it. They don't see themselves going backwards. But if you're attentive, if you're involved, if you know what's going on in your community, you will see, and then you will continue to push forward for things to be better.
So you say, saying not only pay attention to the large elections like the presidential election, but really keep mind on the small elections that affects us here locally, like the school boards, the town boards.
Yes.
Where the change can be really felt immediately.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. Well, Annie and Joyce, I do appreciate you telling me about your thoughts on this upcoming holiday we have here for Dr. Martin Luther King Day, and I do really appreciate it. Anything else that we have not talked about you want folks to know?
No, just to be aware that after Martin Luther King's birthday remembrance, the next month will be Black History, and the NAACP will be trying to coordinate with different churches and put on events for that month. But history is every day, not just MLK Day and Black History, but history is being made every day. And we need to be a part of the history and the future of this country. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this. I do really appreciate it.
It was very nice talking with you.
Thank you so much, Patricio. And big thanks to the Sullivan County NAACP. They're on Facebook and social media. Look for them as NAACP Branch 2187-B, Sullivan County, New York. That's NAACP Branch 2187-B. Don't forget, coming up at 8 tonight, we have WNYC's annual Dr. King special. It was recorded at a live event that took place just last night. You'll get to hear it tonight. It's called A Burning House, MLK and the American Experiment. Again, coming up at 8, right after Trailer Talk tonight. And that's it for the local edition. I'm Jason Dolan. I want to thank you so much for you being here with me. Up next, it's The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Never Sink General Store, featuring deli sandwiches, gourmet specials, and catering. TheNeverSinkGeneralStore.com. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River, riverreporter.com, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.